Listener Production.
Hello, Sasha Barbagat here with you for this episode of The Briefing. Coercive control is a form of abuse that can make victims feel isolated from their friends and family, stripped of independence, and held in a state of fear and hypervigilance. It can be a subtle, nuanced pattern of behaviour that undermines a person's sense of self and agency and safety, which can make it hard to legislate against and hard to police effectively. In Queensland, new legislation is coming into effect that will create a penalty of up to 14 years prison for offenders.
This legislation is a mighty step towards Queensland empowering countless women across the state to fight against domestic and family violence.
On today's briefing, Bension Siebert and listener journo Lizzie Vigor take a deep dive into Queensland's new coercive control laws and also concerns from police who are worried they won't have the resources to enforce it effectively. That conversation in the second half of this episode. But first, let's get all the day's headlines with Katrina Blowers. It is Thursday, April 11.
Hello, everyone. Peter Dutton has labelled comments by Penny Wong about Palestinian statehood as reckless, saying it shows a clear prejudice towards Israel. The opposition leader saying this during a speech last night at the Sydney Opera House. Let's take a listen.
For a crass domestic political win, Penny Wong has damaged our relations with our ally Israel. It is the most reckless act of a foreign minister I've seen in my 22 years in the parliament. And it has weakened our international reputation and standing.
So on Tuesday night, the Foreign Minister flagged the possibility of endorsing a two-state solution, saying it was the only way towards peace. That would mean recognition for both Israel and Palestine as independent states. This is a move which has already won some international support, but not from Israeli PM Benjamin Netanyahu. So while most of the Middle East, Asia, Africa and South America has formally recognised Palestinian statehood, countries like Japan, Canada and New Zealand take the same line as Australia, as well as the big players, the US, of course, UK and France. Penny Wong says that international recognition for Palestine could help build some momentum towards a two-state solution. And ultimately, peace and security for Israel will only be achieved if we have a Palestinian state alongside the Israeli state. But other Liberal senators, as well as now we've heard Peter Dutton, they say it's disgraceful, particularly to be talking about this while Hamas holds civilian hostages. So, yeah, what quite a complex issue for the federal government to be wading into at this time.
Mm. And in his speech last night, Dutton also blamed police and Labor for a rise in anti-Semitism, labelling them weak and woke. And meanwhile, Hamas's leader has repeated calls for a ceasefire, claiming three of his sons and at least two of his grandchildren have been killed in an airstrike. And he made this statement from his base in Qatar, where negotiations continue for an end to the fighting, but with little progress. Katrina, also we've seen over the last day or so families in Gaza marking Eid, which is the end of Ramadan. And that is usually marked by big celebrations, families coming together, lots of food, lots of joy. But of course, this year in Gaza, it's been completely marred by the conflict. 2.2 million people cannot find enough food to eat on the strip, and half of the population is on the brink of starvation. Now, we've seen comments from Joe Biden, who has once again kind of used this really strong language towards Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. He's labelled Netanyahu's handling of the whole thing as a mistake. That's a quote, saying Gaza should have total access to all food and medicine for the next 6 to 8 weeks. Now, Israel has responded. The defence minister has said that Israel, quote, plans to flood Gaza with aid, describing what he called a new phase of humanitarian assistance to the Gaza Strip. Now, of course, this is all talk in public forums. However, you can't help but feel that maybe some of this growing international pressure is finally going to have an impact, and we're going to see that critical aid, food, water, medicine supplies make its way into Gaza safely. US President Joe Biden says he is considering Australia's request to drop the charges against Julian Assange. So you might remember back in February, Anthony Albanese backed a parliamentary motion calling for the return of the WikiLeaks founder to Australia. Barry Pollack, who is one of Assange's lawyers, has called Biden's comments encouraging. And indeed, Katrina, it is the first time that I've been able to find that we've seen a US leader make these sort of comments to say that they are even considering dropping this prosecution. Last month, Assange's extradition from the UK was put on hold after London's High Court said the United States must provide assurances that he would not face the death penalty.
Yeah, just a bit of a recap. The 52-year-old is wanted by the US on criminal charges over the release of confidential US military records and diplomatic cables back in 2010. This has been going on for a while now. Washington says the release of the document had put lives in danger. If extradited, Assange faces a sentence of up to 175 years in a maximum security prison. Now, Assange is married. His wife, Stella, has said that he's being persecuted because he exposed the true cost of war in human lives. He, you know, released state secrets about the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. And Stella Assange has said that his health continues to deteriorate in prison. And, you know, she fears that he'll die behind bars. She's been worried about the state of his health for some time. An update now on the situation in Alice Springs, where authorities have decided to extend a curfew in place to crack down on youth violence. A group of 10 South Australian police officers have been temporarily sworn in to the Northern Territory Police Force after arriving in the town. They will be assisting local authorities, with another group of 10 officers being deployed in a week's time.
Yeah, and if you'd like to know more about what is happening in Alice Springs right now, you can go back and check out yesterday morning's deep dive with a local social worker. We spoke to her to find out how locals are feeling and what the situation is on the ground and how, you know, they feel that authorities are responding to it. Oh, and we finish with some fabulous news out of Queensland. Molly the magpie and Peggy the dog will be reunited.
Oh, pretty good. So relieved and excited. Yeah, we actually spoke with the Premier this morning, so it's still all new.
Yeah, so they were the owners, Juliet and Reese, on a current affair there. Now, you might remember we talked about this story last week. Molly and Peggy. So Molly's the magpie, Peggy is the staffy. They became social media stars after their humans documented their unlikely friendship. But they were torn apart when local wildlife authorities seized the magpie last month. His rescuers found him in 2020 as a chick in a park after he fell out of his nest. They took him home and raised him, but they did not have the appropriate license to keep the bird. Last month, Molly was seized by the Department of Environment, Science and Innovation in Queensland, sparking a massive international response from supporters of the duo, who launched petitions. They even wrote to the Queensland Premier urging them to return the Maggie.
Yeah, there's a huge following of these guys on Instagram and Facebook. I mean, the pictures are super, super cute. The family who had raised Molly have now got their wish with the news they'll be allowed to obtain the license they need to keep the bird. They still haven't seen Molly yet, though. The couple say that they've been getting daily phone calls and that they're told that Molly's doing well, but they really need to see Molly to make sure that Molly's happy and not fretting too much for them. The Premier in Queensland, Stephen Miles, has put out a statement to confirm it, saying Molly will be home very soon. The cynic in me, Sasha, goes, there's an election in October. Well, I'm sure Premier Stephen Miles does like magpies and staffies and has a good heart, possibly. This also has garnered so much international attention and many local Queenslanders who've been, you know, railing against the government and bureaucratic red tape on this one. I just think this is an easy win and the timing probably isn't a coincidence.
Well, I echo your sentiments there, Katrina. But I've got to say, if that's what it takes, if it's an election that is the driving force behind this reunion, then I'm going to take it as a win. And we all know how much social media loves a reunion video, so I will be hanging, waiting to see when Molly and Peggy have that moment when they see each other across the backyard and go, oh my God, we're together again. I personally can't wait. Katrina, thank you so much. Next up, it is our deep dive into Queensland's new coercive control laws.
Hey, a note before we jump into this morning's deep dive. It covers domestic abuse and violence. Coercive control is a pattern of abusive behaviours that can include emotional, psychological and financial abuse, gaslighting, isolation, intimidation and sexual coercion, among other sometimes subtle forms of abuse. Queensland has become the latest state to outlaw it following New South Wales, creating a new offence with a maximum penalty of 14 years in prison. Advocates say it's a huge step in the right direction that will help protect victim survivors of domestic abuse, most of whom are women and children. But police are worried they don't have what they need to enforce it. Lizzie Vigar is a listener journalist from Cairns in Queensland, and she joins us to talk through the new law and how it might work in practice. Lizzie, thanks so much for joining us. What prompted the Queensland government to act now on coercive control?
Hi, Bensian. Look, it really goes back to the death of Hannah Clark and her three children back in 2020. We were all horrified when Rowan Baxter ambushed Hannah and the couple's three children, dousing them in petrol and then setting their car alight before killing himself. The three children, Alia, aged six, Leanna, who was four, and Trey, a three-year-old, died in the car. 31-year-old Hannah, who had suffered severe burns to everything but the soles of her feet, died in hospital just hours later. It was later discovered that Hannah had been subjected to years of abuse at the hands of Baxter. Her parents lobbied the then Palaszczuk government to introduce much tougher laws, and those laws were introduced to the Queensland Parliament last year and finally passed a few weeks ago. Here's Hannah's father, Lloyd, speaking at the announcement.
This legislation is a mighty step towards Queensland empowering countless women across the state to fight against domestic and family violence. Hannah didn't know she was in an abusive relationship because she wasn't being physically harmed. But now coercive control has been outlawed in Queensland, potentially saving the lives of many women and children.
So let's go through it. What is coercive control exactly? Could you give us some examples?
So coercive control is when someone repeatedly hurts, scares, or isolates another person in order to control them. It's domestic abuse and it can cause serious harm, so it's important to know the signs. It can be the abusive person controlling their partner's money, saying who they can and can't have as friends, spying on their social media. It could even be them telling their partner what they can and can't wear. Everyone's experience can be very different. The abusive person often tailors the controlling behaviour to the person they're abusing. They may use a combination of abusive behaviours, which can change over time or as a person's circumstances change. So it may not be physical violence, but it is a form of violence. Here's the Queensland Women's Legal Service Chief Executive, Nadia Bromley, at the same press conference.
Some people have suggested that maybe we didn't need this law. That there have been laws already, there's domestic violence laws, something's been done. But it's the voices of those thousands of brave victim survivors and the tragic stories of many who didn't make it here that compel us not just to do something, but to do everything we can. That's the work we have to do, that's the work we did today, and that's the work we'll do until it's done.
So coercive control was outlawed in Queensland last month. How is that playing out?
Yeah, well, it's been quite interesting. Ian Leavers, he's the president of the Queensland Police Union. So he says while he really does welcome the new laws, it's going to actually be very hard to police them.
It is a real challenge for police, where police are becoming DV fatigued and is actually taking a toll upon the police. It is, as mentioned in the Commission of Inquiry, 40% of all police work, and that includes people who are doing completely other functions, but 40% of all policing activity
relates to domestic violence. And what we do know is we're responding to over 500 domestic and family violence incidents every day. There's been 60,000 breaches and DV orders over the past financial year. There's been 190,000 calls for service when it comes to domestic violence. It is a real problem for police. It is challenging, and we cannot be the only agency that responds to family and domestic violence.
So he's basically calling on the Queensland, New South Wales and Victorian governments to really get active in recruiting new police.
With the new offence of coercive control, we need at least another 500 police immediately to be able to do that, because otherwise there is a false expectation in the community that we will be able to police this, and we're really setting people up to fail. Not only police up to fail, but victims who believe they'll be protected. This is real challenging for us, and at a time in our nation's history when on the eastern seaboard, that is Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria, we are down 4,000 police. So it's not just Queensland, it's New South Wales and Victoria who are struggling to attract people to join policing agencies. So we have some real problems ahead of us. And I will say this is not a state issue in Queensland. This is a national issue that needs to be addressed.
Those are some absolutely shocking figures, and obviously a really difficult quandary, I guess, for police, and a scary thing for victim survivors. Did Ian have any other ideas about how to make these laws work?
Yeah, so he definitely did. He thinks that police and the union do have some ideas that will make a big difference, not just the new laws, but other proactive campaigns to address the problem.
Rehabilitation for offenders. People are not talking about that. We have many people, whilst they're on remand in prison, they are not entitled to any rehabilitation courses which may be on offer unless they're sentenced. And often, because the court process takes a long time, by the time they're dealt with, the penalty is the time is served. Therefore, no rehabilitation has taken place. That is just dumb and doesn't make sense. And I've done a lot of research as to what is occurring overseas. There are many things we can do to be able to combat this horrific thing, which is domestic and family violence.
Pretty powerful words there. So, Lizzie, has the Queensland government considered how to address these issues also in culturally diverse areas of the state?
Yeah, well, they've definitely been considering that. Here's Ian Leavers again addressing that very point.
We need to work with different cultures. We need to work with First Nations people and see how we can do things better and adapt to their individual needs. That is really important we do it in 2024. We're a lot smarter now than we were 50 years ago. We take into account someone's background, the challenges that they've had to endure throughout life. So I just think we need to do that, and we need to act on this as a matter of urgency.
And Bentsian, look, Ian Leavers says we actually all have a part to play in addressing domestic violence.
I think we've all got a part to play. This is a community responsibility, not only from a local community, a multidisciplinary approach, and the justice system has a very, very important part to play. Police are part of the justice system. We all need to play our part in this if we are ever going to make meaningful change. So everyone's got to own this. Every organisation, whether it's child safety, housing, education, youth justice, everyone has a responsibility. A lot of NGOs around the state, they need to step up and do their job. Community leaders need to step up. This is everyone's responsibility. We just cannot put it on one group of people.
Very strong words there. Let's hope that they go some way to addressing this horrible problem.
I couldn't agree with you more, Bentsian. Let's leave the final word to Hannah Clark's mother, Sue.
Government has acted. The police are listening, and there are more resources on the way. It's now up to the rest of us, everyday Queenslanders. We need to speak out against those signs of control when we see them, in our mates, in our family members, and even in ourselves. And recognise that in Queensland, this isn't just poor behaviour anymore. It's a crime, and you won't get away with it.
Lizzie, thanks so much for your time.
It's really good to be with you, Bentsian.
That was Lizzie Vigor from our Queensland Listener Newsroom in Cairns, speaking with The Briefing's Bensian Seabird. And if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence anywhere in Australia, you can call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732. And if you or someone you know is in immediate danger, call 000. That's all we have time for on The Briefing today. Bensian will be back in your feed for this afternoon's briefing from 3 p.m. I'm Sasha Barbagat. Thanks for listening.
Listener.